Welcome to another Michigan Writers series, tonight featuring Margot Lagatuta as our poet of the evening. She is a woman of many words and voices. She is a poet with a voice of family and family relationships, full of images of the home and of the woman's life, or maybe you could better characterize your poetry.
That's always a hard question to answer. You did a good job talking about the themes. I do write a lot about family and home. My work is lyrical and a little bit surreal.
Yes, I noticed that with the floating and
Musical in that I write free verse primarily. I do write some forms. I have a villanelle and a few sestinas in my book.
Can you name a few of your books for the audience?
Sure. Embracing the Fall was from Plainview Press. Before that, I had a book called The Dream Givers that came from Lakeshore Publishing in Chicago. And before that, I had a book called No Edge Lines that was a collaboration with a visual artist. We created a whole...
Nice title.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun with that. We traveled, that show of visual art and poetry that hung together, traveled around the state and to Chicago. And the first book I had was from a press in New York called State Street Press, called Diversion Road. That was my first book in 1983.
Well, I look forward to reading more of your work. You're not only a poet, though, you're an essayist.
Mm-hmm.
You are a publisher as well?
Well, I work for a publisher.
Oh, you work for a publisher. Mm-hmm. What is Inventing the Invisible?
Well, that's the name of my teaching business.
Okay, you are a teacher.
I'm a teacher.
You're a teacher of writing workshops.
Right. I also teach at University of Michigan Flint and Oakland Community College.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us a little bit about teaching?
Well,
poetry, that's always interesting to me. How do you teach creativity?
That's a toughie. It's what I've always wanted to teach, because I found that when I was in graduate school, everyone was teaching the masters and craft, which I loved, and I really loved studying writing. But there wasn't as much being offered about where ideas come from and how do we get ideas. So the class I taught in my graduate semester at Vermont College MFA program, I called it Inventing the Invisible, because I wanted to talk about how to not ever stop myself from writing, because I had stopped writing for a number of years when I was raising my children, and I never wanted to go that long in a dry spell again. So I examined a lot of writers writing about creativity. I read a lot of books about it. And I really tried to develop processes that would trigger me, so that when I felt blocked, I would have something to turn to that would start me up again and trigger me.
Do you have many students in your classes? Are they small, or are they?
Well, they vary. Right now I'm teaching a creative nonfiction class through the Writer's Voice Project in Detroit, and I have about 18 in that class, which is about as large as I like them to get for creative writing.
How long do you have them? Is it a semester's length, or?
That particular class is a 7-week class, and this is the third one I've taught for them. They're kind of a series of 7 weeks long, and then another series.
Are you satisfied with their progress in that amount of time?
I think you can make quite a bit of progress in that amount of time. A lot of them are writers who've already been writing, so they're not brand new to writing, and
they're just getting
with manuscripts. Yeah, and they're like all writers, wanting an audience, wanting a place to share, and the feedback.
A feedback.
That's so important.
I see. You run also a poetry contest.
Yes, I do, on my radio show.
Yeah.
We started the contest about 5 years ago, and it runs through the Poets and Writers newsletter nationally. So I get people from all over the country submitting work now, and we just had a winner in London. We put the winners on a radio show.
Word. London, and England.
We called London, England, and she read her poem. And the other wonderful thing is the station is on the web now, live, and she had family in this country that could hear her reading her poem on
and
the radio.
And what is that station?
WPON in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan.
And the call letters?
It's 1460 AM on the dial, and if anybody's hearing this, they can hear it on the web at www.wpon.com.
Good. You have really, really got around.
Yes, I certainly have, and it's been a wonderful journey.
And tell us about your radio show on WPON.
Okay.
Other than the poetry contest.
Well, I interview writers. My theme is the creative process because that's my fascination, how creativity works. And so I have a guest every week. Oftentimes they're writers, but I've had visual artists and dancers, and I've had performers. We've done live plays on the air. And I interview them about their process. I love to feature their work, so we have lots of live readings on the air. And it's just a very impromptu, informal. I usually meet them for lunch first, and we talk about general ideas that we're going to discuss on the air, but I don't map it out totally because I like to discover things as we go.
The spontaneity.
Right. And as you know, with writers, there's usually no loss for words.
That's true.
Especially when asking them about their work.
Much to my delight. Do you... This is the Michigan Writers Series. Do you ever see Michigan as your muse? Does it ever act as a stimulation?
Very much so. I've lived in Michigan most of my life, and the landscapes in Michigan are very much a part of my writing. In fact, I was a winner of the Michigan State Midwest Poetry Award in 1999. For a poem called Leaving Gaylord, Michigan, and it's for the Society for the Study of Midwestern Literature.
Oh,
and
yes.
It needed to be placed in the Midwest. And so I attend that conference a lot here at Michigan State every May. And so I've entered quite a few pieces that are based in the Midwest, and particularly Michigan, and I find that wherever it is we're planted, it weaves its way into our work.
I noticed you have another one called Moving to Muskegon.
Yes, yes. That's kind of, I've never been to Muskegon.
Still haven't, even after the poem?
Even after, well, I've driven by it. But there's a little story about that poem. Do I have time to tell it?
Sure.
My youngest son, before he moved away, and I was about to go through an empty nest syndrome, I have three sons, had a dream, and he dreamed that he moved to Muskegon. And he was very sad in the dream because he didn't want to leave me, and he was afraid I would be lonely. And we talked about the dream and tried to interpret it together and came to the conclusion that he was a little worried about growing up and moving away.
About the obvious that was occurring to him.
So it became a metaphor between the two of us, you know, a very emotional talk, and I said, it's okay, Adam, you can move to Muskegon. He didn't move to Muskegon, he moved to Chicago and now L.A., but metaphorically, he moved to Muskegon. So that's what triggered the poem.
Very nice.
But moving to Muskegon became kind of a metaphor for doing anything that's frightening and bold. Taking a chance.
What are you working on now?
I'm working on a new collection. It's tentatively called Through the Moving Doorway. And I've been gathering works for quite a while. I've had poetry come out in anthologies, and I'm overdue for a new collection. So I have the work. I need the time, the focus time now to put it together and see how the pieces fit together, but hopefully that'll be coming out either by the end of this year or early next year.
Oh, I look forward to seeing it and reading more of your work.
Thank you.
You are an incredibly productive writer, and I congratulate you on all fronts.
Thank you.
Thank you for appearing with us tonight.
My pleasure.